This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What a fast, fun 2 hours so far, BT. Time to reset, hit you with the crown topic of the day. And, of course, it is the Mets who have crowned themselves a spot in the National League Championship Series. And I would personally crown Francisco Lindor right now as, and I don't want to use the word king, but he is at the head of the table as far as New York sports athletes. A caller brought this up to us a couple of weeks ago, and we were both like, yeah, I'm not there yet. Maybe he'd be in the top five, maybe top three. Brunson, Judge at the time. I think Lindor right now is number one, almost single-handedly. Now, obviously not single-handedly because it takes a team to get there, but he's been involved in every single crucial moment, whether it's the home run in Atlanta, walk, or getting on base in Milwaukee, and then the same thing in game one of Philadelphia. Last night, the Grand Slam, Francisco Lindor has been everything that the Mets have ever dreamed of getting when they first got him years ago, and then some. And for me, right now, he is cementing his place in New York sports lore. He is the guy in this town.
He's not at the top of the list for me yet. I still go with Brunson. It's easy to forget how amazing Brunson was with basically 1 foot and one hand last year. 39, 47, 40, 41, 42 against the Sixers and Pacers in succession without Randall, without OG for a lot of that. But, you know, if Aaron Judge wakes up, obviously Aaron Judge's regular season exploits are, are all-time Babe Ruthian, if you will. But it's funny because when I hear what you say about Lindor, I get it, you know, and a couple of months ago, he was on my list for top three biggest disappointments based on the contract and all the things that we discussed for a while. While he's not one for me, it's Brunson, as I said. He's also starting to inch toward a different list. And forget about the now, but how about the all-time? And you have to win to get on the. That's why Ewing is not on this list. That's why some other people, that almost like, you know, Henrik is not on this list. To get on the list I'm about to reference, you got to win. But whether it's a guarantee from Namath or Willis Reed on 1 foot limping out or Messier dropping the guarantee in the hat trick or Reggie with the three home runs of the World Series and then ultimately all those teams winning.
Jeter, Eli.
Eli with the two, Jeter with a multitude of items. But I just pick out those four because it was also like moments of spotlight so you can actually isolate. The moments of spotlight that Lindor has had in route to the team success as well, or they're elevating him to a place if he can continue to play well and the Mets win the World Series, he's going to join the list that I just referenced, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, well, I love that because it makes you think that if they do finish it off and they're eight wins away now from winning the World Series, their first since 1986, he's up there with Messier. Like, think about that.
Yep.
Francisco Lindor. The way that he started his Mets career. And that's the other thing we're talking about to start the show. And in case you missed it, check it out on the free Odyssey app. Like, this is not just overnight. This happened, you know, by moves that were made when the Mets were building the foundation, when Steve Cohen first took over as owner of this franchise. And then President Sandy Alderson made the trade for Francisco Lindor and signed Francisco Lindor to that big contract that many, even the Lindor supporters like myself, thought was a bad contract because they overpaid at the time and then the market went the way that it did. But now Lindor's worth every single penny because what you do in the clutch is huge, and what you do in the clutch in this town means everything. And Francisco Lindor's done that. It's been a bumpy ride, bumpy road. It hasn't been smooth sailing for Lindor. First year wasn't very good. The raccoon thing, the thumbs down thing, the slow starts to his season. He hasn't been an all-star yet. Think about this. Francisco Lindor could be a New York sports god before he makes an all-star team with the New York Mets. That is insane to think about, but that's how good he has been. Obviously, the team's success has been great, getting them in the championship series. We'll get more into that. We discussed it. We could break it down into what the rotation should be, who they should play, whatever it may be. But to me, none of this is possible without that move of bringing in Francisco Lindor, who now is, to me, at the head of the table of New York sports athletes.
Well, real quick, and think about this, and we'll get back to these calls, obviously. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal. So Julius Randle, for those Knicks, was the first brick.
Yeah.
And he played amazing right away, and then it kind of fizzled out against Miami. He got hurt, and now he's gone. Lindor was the first brick for the Mets, it's the opposite. Unlike Randall, who came out flying out of the chute and immediately changed the perception of the Knicks, Lindor scuffled a bit, you know, certainly the first year, and then there wasn't a ton of team success, and there was talks about the contract, and was he really worth it? And he's flipped the script the exact opposite of what Randall's done. Randall's gone, and now Lindor is just starting to gain altitude. So it really, I don't want to say it's an incredibly, well, I was going to say improbable.
It is.
Well, when they
from where he was?
Well, yeah, that's where I was going. Like, the day that they acquired him, this was plausible.
Right.
From where he was, improbable.
And that's why I wanted to bring up the day that they acquired him, because now it's a distant memory.
Yeah.
But this was the plan. When they made that move to get Lindor, this was the expectation and hope and plan. And for the first few years, it didn't look like that was going to come to fruition. Now it is happening. BT and Sal on the Fan. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Frankie is in Comac. What's up, Frankie?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Sal, LGM, you know, let's go Mets. Mm. But, BT, I'm actually calling to commend you because you like you just said, he flipped the script. You're giving him his credit. Lindor's the man right now. And I just want to tell you, I love the show. Love you guys. And I just wanted to, BT, well, just wanted to thank you for being the guy you are.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, certainly, I'm just doing my job. Thank you. Now, let me just say this once and, you know, clip this, send it to the haters, send it to the clowns, send it to the people who are awesome but just can't hear this right now. All the fun we have, right, and all the takes that we have. If I didn't reposition how I feel about Lindor, I would honestly be the biggest failure in the history of New York sports radio.
Couldn't be taken seriously.
Like, there is a point, and now, and I remember saying this a long time ago, I don't take myself too seriously. Right. I take my job very seriously, as do you. We don't take ourselves seriously. Right. We have egos, but they're not unchecked.
That's why sometimes fans get on us, because they think that we're still fans. We are,
yeah,
but we also have a job to do.
If you think that I was going to fall asleep to the Fan all those years ago, and every time I got in my car, put on the Fan, even going when I was working at a construction site in college, right, where I would go out there in 97-degree heat and listen to the Sweater and the Schmooze and have a sandwich and filthy and dirty and exhausted just to get my little 30 minutes of FAN fix. If you thought for a second that I would play the foil or the contrarian when Lindor's doing this, then you don't really know me yet. Well, and hopefully you're starting to get to know me better and how much I respect sports.
We give opinions here. Sometimes they could be bad opinions or wrong, whatever, not bad, but wrong opinion. And when they are to this degree, you have to acknowledge it. I mean, what are you going to sit here and say, well, I still don't believe in Lindor? You can't do that. You wouldn't be taken seriously.
No.
It happens all the time with us. Same thing, like, I didn't think the Mets were any good when they were 11 games under 500. What am I supposed to say? Well, yeah, I still don't believe in them because of what they did in May. No, you have to evolve with what you're seeing here.
But imagine if I was still playing the game, like, and again, this will expire when we, eventually this goes away and it's about Lindor, obviously not me. Mm-hmm. But, like, imagine if I'm coming on the air today, hey, listen, you know, great shot, but hey, you want to be an all-time, you know, you want to be Messi or you got to want to be Reggie. You got to actually get to the World Series and win it. Like, I could have if I wanted to be that guy.
Yes.
Just kick this down the road. Hey, you didn't really do anything yet. This city's about championships. No. Lindor has been phenomenal. Take this, clip it. He has proven me wrong. He has been awesome. I'm happy for him, and that's it.
We also talked about Edwin Diaz, and I didn't think he should be in the game last night. Jerry is in Brooklyn. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up, Jer?
So I'm a big believer always in energy, and I absolutely despise coaches or managers who get like cold feet and don't go with their decision or whatever the case is. The 2015 team, I'm always going to believe that it was the Harvey was the real, yes, that was the real downfall of that run. You know,
but then
I mean?
Did you have an issue with that in real time? Because that's something we always want from our athletes.
Yeah,
hey, keep me in, Skip. I'm ready.
I didn't think he stuck with the decision. Like you know what I mean?
And I got you.
He went back on it.
Exactly.
And immediately cost
him. He decided he was going to pull him, and then Harvey talked him into it. The crowd talked him into it. I've talked to Terry about that many times. My biggest gripe was his indecision at that time. He made the right decision initially, but I wanted Harvey back out there, so I'm not complaining. Anyway.
So why I'm saying this, like the other day, right? Savarino is dealing, right? And Mendoza decides, I'm going to keep him in. But he goes out into the mound when he's going to face Harper, and just basically it gave me a sense of, like, he's having cold feet. Let's pitch him, whatever. Like, for me personally, if you decided you're going to keep him out there, I'm just going to say something from the dugout, like, get his ass out. That's it. You know what I mean? That's it. Like,
so I understand. Did you want one, Diaz in right? the game or not? What was your take on that?
So now it goes back to Diaz. I loved the fact that he stuck with it and said, because what BT said earlier, like, he has to show, in the long run, he has to show confidence in it. We need him, right? I love the fact that he just said, you know what, I'm going with you and I'm sticking with you and whatever. Now, you're making a point where Peterson could have stayed in. That's not wrong, obviously. But at the same time, I just like the fact that he's going to say, you're my guy. I trust in you, and it wasn't like a cold feet type thing. And that's when you have success.
It's fair, Jerry, and thank you for the call. Here's why I still believe, even though the result worked, that I was right by wanting to stick with David Peterson. Now, again, Peterson could have stuck in the game and gotten in trouble, and they would have had to go to Diaz, and maybe that creates a mess. Who knows? But I didn't want to see any part of Edwin Diaz in that game because Peterson was rolling, and I didn't think there was a need to go to Diaz in that spot. They go to Diaz, and they think differently. Okay, fine. What does he do? He walks the first two guys to a point where the coaches have to come out. His teammates have to go tell him that he's got to throw strikes and challenge the hitters. That shows me that he wasn't ready for that moment. Now, he got the job done eventually, but he wasn't ready for that. And I'm also not playing the long game when there is no more long game to be played. There are two more series max left to go. This is it. This is not a time to stroke the ego or to coddle a guy, get his confidence up. Oh, it's okay, Edwin. Maybe you could succeed in this game against the bottom of the order. This is not the time for that. Your season's on the line. You're messing around with potentially a dangerous Phillies lineup here if it turns over. And if you lose that game, you're going to Philadelphia to face Wheeler for game 5. Your season is on the line. That's not the time to be bringing in the fragile Edwin Diaz and try to stroke his ego and get him confident.
Well, the thing that would drive me nuts here, you know, whether, you know, Glavin when he got here at the, you know, the later stages of his career, Bassett more recently, or Quintana, or any others that had to be a little more reliant on execution and craft rather than just sheer, you know, zip and stuff. And you got to nibble a little bit, and you miss a spot, and because your stuff is average and you have to nibble, maybe eventually you're in a spot 2-0, 3-0, 3-1. You can't nibble. You throw it over the heart of the plate. They turn around a 3-run bomb. You lose. That's a little bit more understandable than somebody who throws 99 to 100 with a wipeout slider who has no interest in challenging people. Like, I just don't get that. It's like being blessed with world-class sprint speed and you jog or you just remain stuck on first base and don't run. Or, you know, you're an NBA center at 7-1 and instead of dunking, you try to, like Charles Smith, who's 6'10 back in the day, you know, you try to lay it in. Dunk it. Like, if you're blessed with certain things, use them. I know that's an oversimplification, but last night was not the first example. He nibbles and he looks afraid to challenge people.
And he clearly is, or at least was. Mike is in New Rochelle. What's up, Mike?
We made it, brother. We made it. In NLCS, man. Let me tell you, man, it's not. Oh, it's crazy, and it's so hard. See, you guys get to watch the games and go to the games. I have to work nights and, you know, just pray to God, you know, something happens. And, you know, like, you know how hard it is just to watch the first three innings of a game and then just pray, you know, that they stick it out. But,
Listen to Howie. Hold on. Listen to Howie on the radio. Hey, what do you mean? Listen to Howie.
Oh, no. Oh, wait. Okay. No, but I can't listen to the radio while I'm working. You know, I start at 7 and, you know.
Right.
But anyway, that's
gotcha.
Not the point. But I'm glad the Mets made it. BT, thank you, you know, for, you know, giving Lindor's props. But if I told you, BT, that the Mets would make the NLCS before the Yankees made the ALCS, you would have thought I was smoking rock.
Forget about right? that. Forget about that. Yes, I would have to answer you directly.
Amazing.
Yes, yes, yes. If you right? said, hey, at 22 and 32, like you approached me with the craziest bet, with the most preposterous terms, I would have signed on for it. I would have taken the bet. Like, yeah, there's no chance.
By the way, I forgot. Happy 10-10-10. Nice cowboy hat. But anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. It's our anniversary today. Yeah, that's right. Thank you, buddy. I got you. Yeah, thank you.
It's hard staying married. You know, I've been separated for 8 years, so I like
ain't
to
hard
see.
It ain't that hard for me.
Yeah, well, you know, you're going to see what I had to deal with tomorrow.
I got news for you. It's still not easy for you. Even when you have a good marriage, it ain't easy. Sal, who are we kidding?
Sal, I love you, man. You're a Mets fan, all right? And my cousin out west, he's listening, and my other cousin up north in Poughkeepsie, Mike, and my cousin out west, is, and they're like, Mike, yo, please, try to call this dude, man, and just try to stay positive, man. Like, we're in the NLCS. We're in the NLCS. Horribly. I didn't even think we were going to hit the playoffs,
Think
man.
About this, Mike. Like, everybody, think about
just,
this.
Just please, I love you. Just stop the criticism. Just stay positive. Stay more positive.
I'm going to do me, and thank you for the call, Mike. Thanks, I'm going to do what I want to do. You do what you want to do. I'll do what I want to do. I've been positive more so than anybody. You can't make everybody happy, so I'm just going to be myself. When I feel like I want to be positive, I'm going to be positive. When I feel like I want to be negative, I'm going to be negative. If I told you, BT, if I came on here 3 months ago, four months ago, whatever it was, when they were 11 games under, even starting to dig out of it, and I'm like, you know what? This team could go on a run and get to the NLCS.
And no chance.
Then nobody would have left me off the airwaves.
No,
like, you can't be taken seriously with that. Now, there was a point when they were being the best team in baseball where we did talk about it. Hey, if we're going to say that the landscape of the sport has changed so much so that anything's possible, you know, you get in and you have it, and this is what happened. We did talk about that. Hey, as long as you get in, you look at there's no great teams. Anything could happen in a short series. They could beat the Phillies, and here we are. They did. Now they're in the National League Championship Series. Now, like, I mean, there's going to be four teams that have a chance to win the World Series. The Mets are one of them.
They're still there, dude. I mean, there's another way to say it. And I'll tell you, I said this when I came in on Monday after the weekend series with the Phillies. Like, there's a difference between beginning to take a team seriously, which I did about a month ago, maybe 3 weeks to a month ago, like start to take them seriously. And then there's where you cross the bridge and you have that moment where you're like, all right, man, I can't ignore this to the extent that maybe I am, even though I believe in them. And maybe they could win a World Series. And when they had all those at-bats over the weekend with two strikes, Iglesias, 8-9 foul balls, 0-2, 0-2, 0-2, Pete sack fly, this guy base hit, 0-2. I'm saying this is just a little different. I've watched baseball for a long time. I don't know that I've ever seen that in succession. Five or six at-bats with 0-2 counts on the road in a playoff game, and they did it. And that's where I said, maybe they could win.
BT and Sal on the fan. More of your calls when we come back. Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the fan. All right, so the Jets made some news today. I mean, it's not a surprise, which is why we waited to get to it. Ooh, breaking news, urgent. Jets have a new play caller. Before we discuss it, BT, let's listen to the new head coach, or the interim head coach, Jeff Ulbrich, discussing the change that the Jets are making.
This is more a byproduct of a different take on things. I'm not saying it's a better or worse take on things by any means, but just a different take on things, a fresh approach.
Well, he didn't even say what happened was they have a new play caller in Downing. I thought we had the whole clip.
We can finish it for you. Todd Downing is now doing what Hackett was formerly doing. He's going to be doing the play calls here.
Right. Okay. Now, I would like to hear what Hackett's role is going to be exactly. You had some thoughts off the air that we gave.
I cracked a joke that I can't say on the air. Yeah.
But anyway, so this is not a surprise now. But what is it? I mean, does it mean anything? You think this is significant?
Listen, I think the Jets are going to play very well Monday, and I think the Jets have a real chance to stabilize their season, and I think that they will. I think that the Jets will still find a way to become a playoff team here, because I think Aaron Rodgers, whether we believe him or not, and he tried to get more separation from having blood on his hands with McAfee yesterday, I'm not buying most of it, but it doesn't matter. That's immaterial. The perception is that he's a coach killer, and there's a perception is that, you know, he's got too much juice, and he's trying to refute that now. So he's going to be okay with his buddy Hackett being relegated to whatever he's relegated to, and I would think that maybe more specifically that Rodgers himself, Sal, would be more open to a different style of play, and that's the key. Like, we're focusing on Salah didn't talk to his kid, you know, on the sideline, he didn't do anything, and this Rodgers, and he's old and that. But the bottom line is the Jets are playing a very antiquated style. Like, that's their biggest problem right now. It's a constant back throw shoulder, like shoulder back throws, right? Back shoulder throw, pardon me. And that is, you can do that once or twice a game. If that's all you're relying on, that's awful. I mean, the NFL now is about guessing and getting more numbers in a certain spot on the opposition. You do that with motion and trickery and getting guys out of position. You watch the Jets play anybody, and the opposing defense doesn't move. They never move at all. Now you watch any other NFL game, you got nickel corners pointing, linebackers pointing, this guy running from one end of the scrimmage, line of scrimmage, to the other end because somebody's moving. And when there's people moving, guess what? The odds of a mistake increase greatly. So I do think that Downing will try to play differently, and I do think it will make the Jets better.
But didn't Robert Saleh want to make this move?
Yeah, he did, but that's immaterial. Like, definitely wanted to.
But I don't understand.
So how does it help them? What does it really change?
Not how does it help them. I don't understand. If the head coach of the team at 2-3, who you decided was your coach for this year, says, our biggest problem is this, the play calling or offensively.
Yep.
I want to make this guy the new play caller.
Uh-huh.
How does that lead to him getting fired and then the interim coach taking over and saying the same thing that the fired head coach was going to do anyway?
It's a great question, but I also think it's a very simple answer. And the answer is that Woody Johnson and maybe Aaron Rodgers, but definitely Woody, looked at Robert Saleh as a passive game day figure who was detached and almost separated from the emotion of the team. And while things would have changed schematically if Saleh got his wish, I think very much the way they're going to change schematically with Ulbrich, the thing that's definitely going to change is the presentation of energy. And energy could, in theory, lead to better starts, fewer penalties, more focus, things that Woody Johnson got sick of and, quite frankly, that I got sick of as well.
Understood. And the other thing that I would ask is, why not just fire Hackett? Why isn't Hackett fired?
Yeah,
so
I have no
so
problem
he's demoted,
with that.
So what's he doing?
Yeah.
What's he doing?
That
like,
I can't answer.
Like, you fired Saleh. Why not just fire Hackett? You took the play calling away from your offensive coordinator. I don't know if I've ever seen that before. Has there been an offensive coordinator that has been told, aside from the head coach, like Dable, saying, Kafka, you're offensive coordinator, sure, but I'm taking over play calling duties.
Yeah, which is fairly common. Happens, yeah.
So the head coach is not taking over play calling duties.
I know.
Downing is taking over play calling duties.
Uh-huh.
And what's Hackett doing? And can you create, and this is more of a legitimate question, can you create a new offense in a week? Like, play calls are one thing. The design and structure of an offense is another. That's not going to change.
Yeah, well, I don't think that you change the offense in 3 or 4 days. They have the extra day because of Monday, but you could have an extra week and you couldn't completely redesign the entire offense in a week. It's too complicated. But what you could do is alter how you present it.
Right.
And you can still remain married to your core concepts, but what you put out there pre-snap, and this you could alter in a couple days, I promise you, where the defense now has to either react or guess, and it's less dependent on what Aaron Rodgers sees and calls, and more and less about him reacting to the defense, because that's the problem. I mean, we talk about him having too much juice with personnel. He's got too much say at the line of scrimmage, man. Right. I think it's confused his mind. Now, you lay it out well. This is far from perfect. Trust me, this is a disaster on a lot of levels. But why keep Hackett? I'm going to give you the answer. Because you might be able to change the offense and make it better by doing what you're doing with Downing and relegating Hackett to whatever role. But if you would have had Hackett leave the building, you may have run the risk of Aaron Rodgers emotionally checking out. And if you can circumvent that and still change the plays and have Rodgers engaged, that's the only way you could save the season.
Exactly. Just trying to save it for now.
That's the
only goal. BT and Sal on the fan. Fred is in Stillwater. What's up, Fred?
Hey, Fred.
Hey, how you doing, Sal? BT.
What's up, Freddie?
I'm at a friend, Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, he's
a
great.
Grand Slam. you know what?
Is that
you
what it was last night? A grand slam? I didn't know that.
You know, you guys you're not going to believe it, but I couldn't sleep last night. I was so hyped up about the Lindor hitting that grand slam. I couldn't sleep. I mean, that was like the best game ever.
I could believe it. Now, I haven't had many of these in a while, but there are those few nights, and thanks for the call there, Fred, those random games where you inhale every highlight, every tweet. Like, all you're doing is look at your phone. You just want the moment to live on forever. And you should. Well, not forever, but certainly today and certainly tomorrow. Like, that's the beautiful thing about this. The Mets get to chill. The other two teams that are playing are still fighting, which means their bullpens will get further taxed, whatever. And the Mets have very rarely can you enjoy enjoy without rushing it. And like every other checkpoint so far for the Mets, they've had to kind of rush it.
Yeah.
All right, hey, the Braves, all right, we got to rush it. Oh, the Brewers, all right, we got to rush it. Get ready. Well, now you don't have to rush it. You can kind of, you know, really lengthen this out and truly appreciate the moment and have plenty of time to get ready for game one.
Agreed. It was perfect.
It's beautiful.
And I would believe it because I could not sleep last night, so much so that when I did eventually go upstairs, now my wife, after the Mets game, she went up to go to sleep, and I was still staying there watching the Yankees. And then when the Yankees were done, I went up a little bit, but I still couldn't fall asleep. So I'm on my phone. I'm looking at all the celebrations and all the post-game stuff still. She's like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like, I can't sleep. Like, I'm kind of wired with that energy. I will, though, say that not only do I not think it was the greatest game ever, I know that you're exaggerating a little bit there, and it was a great game, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't even the greatest game this week. So when you expect that to happen, it doesn't feel as good as when the improbable or unexpected happens. I expected Lindor to drive in those runs and for the Mets to win that game yesterday. It would have been devastating had they lost that game and had to go to a game five. I expected that to happen. Doesn't mean it wasn't great, but when you expect it, it's a little bit different as opposed to when they blew the game in Atlanta. That game one, when Lindor hit the home run, that was unexpected. Alonso's home run saving the team from, I mean, they were done. That was it.
Yeah, he was done and they were done.
Correct. He was done and they were done. Well put, BT. And then he hits the home run and it's like, oh my God, even now thinking back, it's like, I can't even believe that that happened. And so you've had great wins this week. Also, dating back to, I've referenced this a couple of times, where I thought this series was going to be just like it was in 99 and 2000. I've seen this before. Now, yeah, it's 24, 25 years ago, but I lived through it as a fan. Going to the game 3 and 4 that they beat the Diamondbacks in 1999. And going to games, same thing, 3 and 4 where they beat the Giants in 2000. Now, though, there's more at stake here. Like, obviously it was great, but it's still, you know, there's wild card, check. Division series, check. Now, it's for the right to play in the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
So now, no matter how many times you've experienced this before, it doesn't matter. This is almost as special as it gets.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, your tweets back up the fact that you felt good about Lindor getting up there because you were tweeting in real time.
So there's nobody I'd rather have up than him.
Yep, yes. I saw it. And so you're on point with that. But the camera shots that they were showing at Citi Field paints a little bit of a different picture. And the angst, which is understandable.
I was surprised. You're right.
The energy, the fear, the trepidation. It's not a lack of belief in the team. It's probably trying to slay 40 years of heartbreak.
I guess. And Stearns, did you hear Stearns in the postgame? That is one thing that he said that I agreed with, too, where he's like, you just knew. Everybody. It felt like everybody in the ballpark knew. Now, maybe not everybody, to your point. But if you're watching long and paying attention, how could you not think that he was going to get the job done in that spot? Doesn't mean that he was going to, but I felt good about it as opposed to when Diaz comes in the game, I don't feel good about
and
it.
And those tweets signified that as well. Yes. A couple of on-point tweets last
good
night,
point,
Sal.
BT. Kenny is calling from Staten Island. What's up, Kenny?
Hey, Ken.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, buddy.
Crazy game last night. Listen, I was texting back and forth with Joe B, and he was like on the fence of putting Diaz in. But before I go further, BT, have you heard from that fool that you stepped on Saturday?
No, we gave him a slow sporting death. We will never hear from Maddie in New Jersey again. It's over for him.
You know what's great? No matter we hear from him or not, you know how he feels.
Ooh,
you know how he felt last night. How he feels today. Yeah. It's the greatest thing.
Yeah.
No, but when BT undressed him Saturday, I was like, please, Mitch, you got to win this. We don't need this fool calling up. But you know what? We'll put that behind us. Moving forward now, isn't it ironic that after the Mets getting all these games crammed from the end of the season, playing in the Braves, squeezing it out and going to Milwaukee with no rest, now we get a little honeymoon here, and now we have our ducks lined up in order.
And
I'm going to throw this out there. Who do you start game one? Do you go right back to your best pitcher, who I feel is Manaea?
Well, we're going to get into this. This is a deeper and thanks for the call, Kenny. This is a deeper conversation. I don't want to shortchange it now. We got to get into this because I think we have different thoughts, you and I.
Yeah, we do. And Andy Martino had some reporting on it last night, what he thinks that they're going to do. So, I mean, he's probably taking educated guess as to what they're going to do in the rotation. I have my thoughts on it. You have yours. We will get into that a little bit later.
There's no doubt. And this triggered my memory, too. Like, remember in April and May, I spent a lot of time at Staten Island. I told you, over at Great Kills, a Little League, Colt had a lot of games, a lot of tournaments. That was, I can't tell you, and just think about how this has flipped. How many times, I mean, you just have to take my word for it. Why would I lie? Where I'm walking into the Great Kills baseball facility, right? Drop him off, and I got to go park the car, and I'm walking back by myself. I can't tell you. There was at least 20 times in the 3 or 4 weekends I was there. Forget about on the grounds. I mean, people driving in their cars, yelling out their window, BT, stopping the car. Dude, maybe you're right about Lindor. Maybe you're right about these Mets. Like, they looked so, and not to bring it back to Lindor,
but
it does bring a full circle. We get a call from Staten Island. That's when, because I was there in April and May quite a bit, and they were dying a slow, painful death. And here we are, Kenny on Staten Island, calling us up, happy, getting ready, NLCS, with the chance to line up the rotation however you want, which, as we said, we will get to a little later. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019 is the number.
BT and Sal back on the Fan. All right, BT, since Kenny brought it up before, the caller Kenny from Staten Island brought up, how are we going to align, or how do we think the Mets are going to align their rotation, or how would we align their rotation? Let's get into that now. We'll do Yankees coming up at 1 and talk about what they should do, whether it's game 4, game 5, and we you know, kind of have it set, but whether that's the right move or not, and then maybe look ahead with them a little bit. But for the Mets, so Andy Martino reported on this last night saying what he thinks the Mets are going to do here, and I was actually shocked to see this. He said they're going to go with Kodai Senga, or he thinks they're going to go with Kodai Senga in game 1, piggybacked by David Peterson, which is what we saw in game 1 of the Philadelphia series, then Severino in game 2, Manaea game 3, Quintana in game 4. My issue with that is Manaea on normal regular rest, their ace, would be Sunday for game 1. Mm-hmm. Why the hell would you not go Manaea on regular rest for game 1? And worry about everybody else, push them back. Everybody's going to have extended rest here, but you're going to go Kodai Senga and David Peterson in game 1 when Manaea is fully rested? That makes no sense.
Well, if you, I understand the dilemma there, or at least your pushback. Now, a couple things. I actually don't mind Senga getting the ball here because I want to try to weaponize him moving forward. So he gave you 31 pitches on Saturday before Peterson came in. He's going to have a little extra time here because it's going to be a week and a day before, if he does get the baseball like Andy's reporting, which I think makes sense. Game 1 Sunday, NLCS, that's ample time.
Just to be clear, by the way, sorry to interrupt, he says he thinks.
He thinks, not a report. Right. Yeah, and the very, very big difference, thinking, not quite reporting. I'm thinking what he's thinking is good. Now, if you go to Senga in game 1, is it unrealistic? This might shape my answer and change my opinion. Do you think he could go from 31 pitches to 60 to 65?
Well, I mean,
is that unrealistic?
So how many innings do you think? You're talking about 4 or 5?
Well, yeah, he went 2 innings, 31 pitches Saturday. I think that he could have got another one. Now he's got more time to regenerate. He's going to be able to go at least 50 or 60. Yes, I think the answer is yes, 60 to mid-60s max. Now, whether that's 4 innings or 3 innings, if he labors a bit, I don't know. I always think it's more important pitches thrown rather than innings actually thrown. So I like that. Now, what you're saying, if you go to your ace, not only do you get him on regular rest, but you get him another game. And you can go like the old Mike Scott thought, like game 1, game 4, game 7, stretch this out like the way aces used to do it.
Right, and that's what Manaea is. On normal rest, you're not going to pitch your ace in game 1? I don't understand that logic.
So I understand why you don't understand that, but let's at least think from the Mets' perspective. Why do you think they would think this way right now?
Well, one thing that I was thinking about as we have this conversation is the matchups. Like, the Mets have been very good at figuring out matchups. Do they like Senga against this Dodger lineup? Senga, Peterson on the road for whatever reason? Like, I don't know, but if they're doing it just because they want to have that be the rotation, that doesn't make any sense. Manaea is their best pitcher. Yep. He's been their best pitcher. He is a dominant true ace and has been that in every sense of the word lately. Why wouldn't you have him pitch game 1?
Who was their best pitcher last year?
Yeah, I get it.
I know it's last year.
So for what?
Things change, but I get it.
4 or 5 innings?
Yeah, but then 4 or 5 innings could become, and then game 4, 6 innings.
And then Severino in game 2 to boot? Like, it doesn't seem to make any sense for me.
Well, that part is now I'm not willing, unless it's out of necessity, which to your point, it's not. Now I'm with you. Like, if you wanted to do Manaea game 2, I think that's more realistic or plausible. To not have Manaea throw a pitch until game 3, when he can conceivably pitch 1, makes no sense. Now, I'm okay with him going game 2 because I do like the Senga and stretching him out and what he could bring to the table moving forward. But to wait till game 3 makes no sense when he's your best pitcher.
That
makes zero sense.
I thought Senga started game 1 against Philadelphia because he was their best option. It was either Peterson, who just pitched out of the bullpen, you know, a couple days before, Tyler McGill, or Kodai Senga.
Yep.
So when we were dissecting this before they even announced it, I was saying Senga might be their best option here with piggyback from Peterson. But that was their only option. Now they have any option that they want.
True.
Including their best pitcher. So it just doesn't make any sense to start Kodai Senga in game 1. Now, is it the end of the world? I mean, you hope not, but you're pushing back Manaea for game three. I also want to know, do you have the schedule up, Jack? We have the schedule of what the NLCS is. I know game one is Sunday.
Yeah.
Game two is Monday.
Good, so it's back-to-back. Mets
right,
always
and
get
then
that.
I'm,
that's nice.
So I'm assuming off day Tuesday and yep. then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
I don't know. Is it definitely Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
I believe that it is.
Well, there's no off day sprinkled in. Nice.
So,
all right.
So if you just, I'm trying to like do it in real time and push guys back, but if Manaea is normal rest is Sunday.
Okay.
Think about how much you're pushing him back. He's
that's
not going to start until Wednesday.
Now.
It's a week since he's taken him out.
That's odd. Again, I'm good with Senga going, but the other thought is, and I'm sure they've considered this, if Andy's thought process is on point, the temptation to mix things up and do whatever they want to do, how much of that's influenced by the fact that they believe of all their potential starting pitchers, none are as adaptable to extra rest than Manaea. Maybe they look at Manaea, and maybe they've got the evidence to prove that. I'm sure they do. Like, somewhere along the line, like, Manaea on long rest is really good, and Senga or Seve or anybody else on short rest is not.
Well, Senga's supposed to be. Now, wait, when was game one?
Game one was Saturday in Philly.
Okay, so where are we at with Senga? Is this normal rest for him then?
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday? But they're trying to truncate it as much as they can. It's still longer rest, but it's not long rest.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a little unconventional. I'll give you that.
And he had the, you know, Senga would benefit from longer. I just, you know, again, I don't know the pitchers the way that Mendoza and Stearns knows or Hefner. So they know these guys. Who's going to be a creature of habit? Who's going to be better with extra rest? I would think Severino, knowing him from the time of the Yankees, he would benefit from extra rest. Same thing with Kodai Senga, especially off the injury. And also just using common sense saying, Manaea is my best pitcher. I want him to pitch as much as possible in this best of seven game series. So I guess let's look at it this way then, BT. This is what I meant to do before, looking it up, lining the days. If you pitch game one on Sunday, that means Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you would be lined up to pitch game five on Friday.
If you're Manaea.
Yeah, well, whoever pitches game one.
Yep.
So, and in that case.
And game five would be at Citi
Field.
And then
when is game six? When's game six and seven? Do we know that? Is that Sunday, Monday again? Game six and seven, I have not looked that far ahead. We have an answer for that or no?
Yeah, we'll get it, yeah. I mean, we'll get to the Yankees rotation next, but is it something as simple as, let's face it, I mean, even though I believe in Rodon.
It is Sunday, Monday. Sorry,
it is Sunday. Okay, it's all good. Sunday, Monday, thank you. So, like, I mean, Rodon terrified me the other night, but I understood that maybe going him in game two because this is of his favorable home splits.
Right.
How much of this is analytically driven? Manaea in Queens, whatever.
Right,
I don't know.
But at some point, yes, you're right. I mean,
you shouldn't move mountains to get your ace to baseball. Rodon's not the ace.
I want Manaea to pitch as much as possible.
I get that.
Game one, game five, potentially. Game seven, the short rest. Now, he would pitch Friday, so that means it would be off Saturday, Sunday, and then it would be on 2 days rest out of the bullpen, potentially, in a game seven, if necessary. Hmm. Otherwise, if you pitch Manaea in game three, which Andy indicates that his opinion is that they will, that would be he would start on Wednesday, game three, at Citi Field.
And then game seven or game six?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, he'd be on normal rest for game seven.
Game seven, normal, 5 days.
So it would be
days.
3 and 7.
Okay, so the only difference would be you would have him available in theory for two starts and a little pen work if he goes the opener. If he goes game three, you're only locked into two starts and no chance of any bullpen work.
If there's a game seven.
And that's the other thing. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's great to have your ace waiting for game seven, but if you're down 3-1, hey, he might not pitch.
Could bring him back on short rest for game six, but in your scenario, 3-1, you need him for game five.
Yeah, they got a lot to consider. This is a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before.
It's a good conversation.
I do trust the Mets. However, I also got to trust my gut. All right, BT and Sal and the family, when we come back, we'll get your calls and the Yankees side of things as well. 888-808-1019.